right. Well, now please join me in welcoming Megan to our stage.
Hi, my name's Megan. I'm an alcoholic. And this is probably one of my biggest fears, standing in front of people and talking. You know, I'm really grateful to be here today. I'm really grateful to have a lot of friends who came to support me. I haven't even started and I want to cry already. I look at my life today and I think about how grateful I am. I grew up in a small town called Crescent City with my mom and my stepdad and my two sisters. I thought I lived in a normal family. I thought everything was normal. I thought drinking on a normal daily basis throughout the family was a normal thing. 10 years old, my grandparents sending me off to go fill up the wine glass. My aunt sending me to go fill up the wine glass, you know, and I thought that was normal. I thought that family fights and things like that were just part of a family dynamic, you know, and I put that later on into my relationships with other people, you know. I took my first drink when I was 10. It was from the wine that they were having us fill up. That, you know, that fancy wine that's in the box. Yeah, they had me fill that up quite a few times. And I finally got to the point where I wanted to try it. I saw what they were doing and that they were having a lot of fun doing it. And why not try it? And I actually really liked it. I really liked it. So every time I filled up their glass, my mouth got filled up. My gullet got filled up numerous times. I don't remember ever catching a buzz at that point, though. The first time I actually got drunk was when I was 14, and I really liked it. It was a very freeing feeling. It was very, I felt like I could be me. That was the person I had been looking for all my life, because I was very shy, very reserved, wouldn't really talk to anybody, and a lot of people misconstrue it for being a snob, which, if anybody knows me, I'm not a snob. No, I am far from it. Since then I had chased that feeling and never quite got it. You know, I never quite felt that feeling again, but I continued to try. When I was about 14, my mom moved us away from my hometown of Crescent City and pulled us down here to lovely Hanford, Corcoran area. And it was a complete culture shock for me. I had grown up in the same town since I was little and 14, and I had to make new friends, and I had no idea how to do that. I had no people skills. I had no confidence, you know, so I came down here and was very alone. I continued to feel alone for a year, and then my mom finally moved us back up north with the promise that she was going to be coming. She'd come back up and move with us, and she left me with my stepdad, who at that point was a very sick man. I resented her for leaving us up there and not coming back to see us, to live with us. And I took it very hard. I took it as she abandoned me, and I took that into my relationships later on in life, too. I'm going to get off before you do. I'm going to fuck you up, to use my language, before you do to me, because I don't want to hurt. You know, that was my MO. I'm going to hurt you before you hurt me. You know, and eventually, I got into my terrible teen years, you know, where you want to rebel and you want to do everything and, you know, parents say no. So I got kicked out, and I moved back down here with my mother. And I swore I would not be alone like I was for that 1 year in Hanford. We lived in Corcoran, and I made every effort I could, took anything I could, alcohol, drugs, whatever it was, to make me feel a part of it. And I did. I felt really a part of. You know, I was having fun. I was doing, you know, what every teenager normally thinks they do, which is normal for the people in this room. But for normal people, it's not. And I didn't realize that at the time. That's my water. Anyways, I swore that I would have friends, and I did. I had acquaintances, people who were there for the good, not really for the good times, mostly, but people who I couldn't really depend on to be my friends, not like the people that I have in my life today. People who know that I'm really nervous and come to see me speak because I'm about to, I don't know, rambling. I continued on that path, regardless of what my mother said, regardless of what the police said, regardless of even what I knew in my gut was wrong, regardless of the family that I hurt, the promises I broke, the lies that I made, the things that I stole. I took myself away from my family, and that was the biggest thing I took. I lost myself. Actually, I didn't really lose myself. I had never known myself at that point. I was in abusive relationship after abusive relationship, and I thought that's how it was because that's how I was raised. Cops come to my house all the time, you know. Dad beat the crap out of mom, and that was just normal, you know. But I decided I didn't want to be that one that got beat. I was going to be the beater, and I have violent issues. They're not as bad as they used to be. Thank you, God. And thank you because I did my fourth and fifth step, and that relieved a lot of it. I didn't really want to take that fourth and fifth. I was really scared. My sponsor will vouch for that because it was like pulling teeth to get me to do that. I thought I was unique and I was special. And I thought, what if it doesn't work for me? What if it doesn't do for me what it's done for everybody else because I'm so special? But I finally took a chance and I found a person that I was able to do it with and feel comfortable and safe, and she was able to lead me through it. You know, and I'm really grateful for that today because I went through sponsor after sponsor after sponsor, and I blamed them. It wasn't me. It was them. They didn't call me enough. They didn't, you know, talk to me enough, pay enough attention to me. You know, I didn't make that effort. Looking back, what my part in it was, I didn't make any effort. I expected it all to just happen for me, you know. So when I finally did that fourth and fifth step, it was quite a relief for me. And I am still a procrastinator. That was on my list of character defects. Yeah. I'm working on it, though. Yeah. I know I'm bouncing around. I came into this program not on my own will. The courts decided that I needed to be here. The judge saw that I had a problem. And even at some point, towards the end, I felt that I had a problem. You know, but the judge saw it first, and he saw fit that I go to jail, and I spend 4 or 5 months there, which that was not fun. But it was actually better than the life I was leading. I had food in my stomach, and I had a bed to sleep in, and I didn't have any responsibility. I didn't have to worry. But I knew when I got out that I had to do something different. You know, but we as alcoholics wait until it hurts really, really, really bad before we do something about it. And so when I was court ordered into a rehab, I took my sweet time getting in there, you know, and as things were progressing, it was getting worse, and I was living in a trailer with no electricity, no water, complete dump. Half the clothes I had weren't even mine, and I didn't know where my next meal was coming from, but that wasn't what was more important. What was more important is where my next drink was coming from, when I would get that next drink. Because it became more important than anything else. I don't know when it stopped being fun and started being necessity, but it did. You think I would have learned, rewinding a little bit back to when I was 16, I went out to a party, and I thought I was just having some fun, and I drank a little too much. Surprise! I ended up in the hospital, but before I could get to the hospital, the cops got me, and they took me in, and I threw up all over the police officer. I have apologized to him since then. Yeah. But I didn't care. I swore for a couple days, about a week, that I would never drink again, and I would sure never drink Presidente. And I still haven't. I still will not touch the shit. It's horrible. But I drank everything else, and I put everything else in my body, and I didn't care what it was. You know, I remember getting into Cornerstone. It was a blessing, and I was scared as hell. We had to call in on a daily basis to check in, so we stayed on the list, just to show that we wanted it, you know, and I called in on a daily basis, and I called in, and one morning I remember sitting on the steps at someone's house, thinking, God, this is the end. I can't take this anymore. I don't know how much more I can take. Please, God, get me out of here. Help me. And I made my call for the day to Cornerstone. And I wasn't calling, I wasn't praying like, oh, please get me into Cornerstone. I was just looking for something different. I called Cornerstone, and one of the counselors had told me, are you ready? And I was like, oh, you know, and she told me, come in Monday, and that was a Friday. And I was scared. You know, I went in, and I really thought I had it all together. I really did. So after 29 days, I left. I was supposed to be there for 120, but I had it licked. Yes, I did. I went back to the same old thing, the same playground, everything, the same people, and it didn't matter because it all picked, I picked up right where I left off. Maybe I didn't pick up the outside issues right away, but I picked up alcohol, and that was my number one, my number one. And, within no time, I was right back where I was, still homeless, still in a trailer with no electricity, dirty, nasty, no water, no food, jobless, no respect, and finally my mom cut me out, said, I want nothing to do with you. I want you to have nothing to do with your sisters, and that broke my heart, because for so long, I was raised with the only people I had were my family because I really didn't have any friends, and that's what got me. I thought, I can't live my life like this anymore. I can't live so alone. Because that's how I felt. You know? And this feeling that I feel right now, I don't ever want that to leave. I want it to stay with me for as long as I live. Because it's my gratitude. Gratitude that I can be here today and be alive. And not be laying dead on the side of the road. Because I almost was, but that was my higher power right next to me, you know? So I went back into Cornerstone after I had sworn, and I made a total jerk of myself over there and told them, you guys don't know anything. I'm never coming back, tossing everything around in my room like a rock star. And I came back humbled and beaten because that's what my addiction and my disease does to me. It beats me down into submission. And I stayed my whole 120 days, and I was actually afraid to leave. I was afraid of facing the real world. But I got a job, and I got to go into sober living, and I got to meet new residents. And that was really awesome. And I still see some of those residents today. That's a really big blessing in my life. While I was there, I made a really good friend, and she talked me into going to meetings. I didn't really want to, but whatever, it was something to do. And so I went there, you know, and she talked me into it on a daily basis to where it was getting to the point where I didn't need her to bring me or take me or talk me into it. I was just going of my own free will. And I don't know how much I heard, but I know what I felt. I know that I felt that there was happiness and peace within these rooms. Within people, smiles on their faces, happy, no matter what they were doing. No matter if somebody died in their family, or they were going through an illness, or whatever. They just didn't drink no matter what. And I can respect that, and I appreciate that. I had my last drink on July 21st of 2007. Because I relapsed after that a couple times. And I had a little bit of what it's like to be sober. I didn't really have any recovery in me. I hadn't worked the program, but I had a little bit of sobriety, and I knew what I had to lose. And I went back out. And I did everything that I would have done out in my addiction. I crammed that all into one weekend, and I realized, you know what, I sure do have a lot to lose, because I was drinking and driving. I was putting any substance in me that I possibly could. I was lying to my family and my friends. I was lying to my job. You know, I was avoiding all responsibility, and that was what told me, you know what, you really do have a disease. There's nothing that says you can go back and do what you were doing and be normal about it. I can't. I cannot drink like a normal person. And the funny thing is I wouldn't want to today. I'm so grateful for the life that I have and the feelings that I feel. Don't like them all the time. Scares the heck out of me most of the time. And, but I'm really grateful to have these feelings and these people in my life today. You know, I think about everything I've gained in my life since I've come into recovery. And it just keeps growing, and I'm just amazed, because I personally don't think I deserved it. I never felt worthy. I never felt like I deserved much of anything. But today I believe in my heart, a little piece of me believes that I do deserve this. I do deserve to be in this room, and I do deserve to be a recovering alcoholic. I deserve the good things that come to me in life, because my higher power loves me. And whether I wanted him there or not, he was there. He was there for me all the time. You know, I struggled with that when I first came in, that there's no such thing as a higher power. Why would he let the things that happened to me happen? And you know what? Those things that happened to me made me a stronger person. A lot of them were self-inflicted, but a lot of them I couldn't control. But they made me the person that I am today, and that hopefully I can reach out to some other people in this program and help them too. And I'm just really, I'm amazed that I can do that today. You know, I have a relationship with my family. That was one of the biggest gifts I got, was to have my mom back in my life, and I didn't want to kill her anymore. Because I really, really, really wanted to kill her at one point. And my grandparents, the two most amazing people in this world that I know, they stood by me no matter what. They were the ones when things got hard at home, I came home to them. They took care of me no matter what. They loved me. They supported me. And I'm just grateful that I can have them back in my life today. You know, and it's all thanks to this program. You know, I'm grateful to be here, but I'm done. I guess we can take questions. I might answer. I don't know.
Okay.
When I finally decided to start going through the steps, which, to be quite honest, I haven't finished because I am, once again, a procrastinator. I'm pretty sure I did the first step when I was sitting on the porch and praying to God because I couldn't do this anymore. My life was clearly unmanageable. Look at my surroundings, look at my feelings, look at everything around me. I was done. Steps 2 and 3 were a little hard for me to grasp, because I really didn't trust that there was a higher power for me that worked in my life. And then I had to look back and think about events in my life that had come to pass that I survived and that I lived through, and that I hadn't done it all by myself, you know, because to admit it, I really wanted to kill myself. I was just too chicken to do it. Step four. That was the hardest part. It wasn't so much talking about what was in step five. It was the step four, writing it down. Because I am such a big procrastinator. But I did steps one, two, and three like five times. Because I couldn't keep a sponsor. Like I was saying earlier, it was them, not me. And finally I found one that I was comfortable with and that I decided I was going to go through the steps with no matter what. I don't care what happens, I need to go through my steps. Now I've done that rather kind of slowly. 3 years, so I'm finished. And I don't recommend that anybody does that. Because the feelings that I've got from doing the steps that I've done so far have been amazing. Yeah, they were hard. But it was such a relief to work through them. And I don't know. I'm working on my amends list and making amends, and it's hard. You know? It's hard to find the right words. Because I don't feel like the things I did are excusable. But I try to live on a daily basis not to do those things again. And you know what? I most of the time really screw up. Screwed up today. Made a complete jerk out of myself and then had to go make an amends about it because I didn't get what I wanted when I wanted it. You know, and those are my expectations. That's pretty much my biggest downfall. That leads to that took off all my other character defects. And I'm so glad I recognized that today. You know, I almost didn't come and do this. I had an excuse, a really good one, because a couple weeks ago I was told I had Bell's palsy and it made my mouth really weird, like slack, and my eye won't blink. And that was my ego. I had to sit and think about it. I was like, you know what? I don't have to do this. I even had one person co-signing it. I said, well, I wouldn't do it. It wasn't you. I know. I even had one person co-sign it. Say, well, if I had that, I wouldn't do it either. But you know what? I had to look at my motives and think about why is it that I don't want to do it? You know? For starters, is an excuse. Two, it was my ego and my pride. I didn't want people to see me with my mouth. It's not even bad now. Nothing now. But I didn't want people to see that. But I think about how I looked when I was out there. And wow. It's amazing. This isn't so bad. You know, I walked around for 2 months with staples in my head that I really didn't care to have taken out. I looked like the Bride of Frankenstein, and so a little slack in my mouth and the droop in my eye is not a big deal. You know, I'm just grateful that I got to be here today. And with that, I'll stay.